Limitless, the podcast between. This is Jason Horsley at horticulture.com talking to Douglas Valentine.
Yeah, but you know, you gotta remember I'm pretty deaf, so I gotta look right at your mouth and you gotta speak slowly and distinctly for me.
Okay, I can do that.
So where are you? Like, what part of the country and what do you do?
I'm in British Columbia in Canada.
And yeah.
I run a thrift store with my wife and write books and do internet stuff with the rest of my time. Okay, so let's get started. I wanted to start with the Phoenix program because that's obviously very central to everything that you write or everything I've read anyway so far, and also because many people are not going to be familiar with it. So if you could just start by summing up about the Phoenix program, what it is for people who aren't familiar with it, and then we can just take it from there.
What do you want me to familiarize people with?
With the nature of the Phoenix program, how it originated and why it's so relevant even today to...
It's a long story and it's a complicated one. So, you know, I'll do my best to sum it up in a few words, but for anybody who's unfamiliar with the Vietnam War, it's going to be almost impossible to understand without explaining the nature of the Vietnam War to begin with, and that the United States decided to start sending troops to the country of South Vietnam in 1965 because the government that it had installed there 10 years earlier was having a hard time defending itself against its own citizens and also against North Vietnamese soldiers who were trying to overthrow the South Vietnamese government. So the United States was supporting the South Vietnamese government and the South Vietnamese military, and it was sending its own soldiers over there to defend that government, which was totally dependent upon the United States for its financial support. The country of South Vietnam couldn't support itself. It couldn't support its own army. So the United States was paying for the South Vietnamese army, and it was financing the South Vietnamese government and basically all of its administrative organs, including its police forces. Anyway, the South Vietnamese were not doing a very good job of fighting off their own citizens who are trying to overthrow it and the North Vietnamese. So started sending soldiers over. And when about 2 years into that misadventure, the big brains that were running the war decided that they had to do something a little bit more serious, because the people of South Vietnam were not being defeated. So they decided to create the Phoenix program as sort of the final solution to the South Vietnamese, to this war in South Vietnam. And the Phoenix program was designed to identify the leaders of the revolutionary government in South Vietnam. Okay, you know, you got to figure like more than half the people were against the government of South Vietnam, and they had organized themselves into a secret government that managed the revolution. And they supported the North Vietnamese soldiers, and they supported the Viet Cong guerrillas, and they organized all sorts of political actions against the Americans and the South Vietnamese government. So the CIA decided the only way to win the war was to kill off all these people. And they spread a vast network of informants across the country. And these informants started identifying the leaders of the revolution, who were all operating under aliases. You know, they'd be like a teacher during the day and then a district political leader at night and stuff like that. It was an intelligence war. And so they hired all these informants all around the country to try to identify the leaders of what they called the Viet Cong infrastructure. And then they coordinated 25 different military and civilian agencies in the effort to identify, locate, and neutralize these people and, if possible, turn them into double agents. They created a vast network of secret interrogation centers so that they could bring suspects to these interrogation centers and warp them over, try to get them to inform on people, to tell where guerrilla units were located. But mostly they just wanted to terrorize these people. And then they created death squads. So once people identified where a leader was, the death squads would go out and try to capture the people. And if they could capture them in if they were operating in an area that was controlled by the South Vietnamese government, they generally tried to capture them. If it was an area that was controlled by the revolutionaries, then they just tried to kill them. The Phoenix program had could ask the United States Air Force to drop bombs on villages if they thought that there was some kind of important cadre there. And the special forces were involved, and the CIA was leading basically every aspect of this, which was basically a Gestapo SS operation to try to kill off the resistance. And the CIA created this program in 1967 and ran it right through the end of the war. That's the Phoenix program.
So one of the things you mentioned as to how it operated was the black propaganda aspect, which was the stating of brutalities that it would then blame on the Viet Cong and then justify its own reprisals. Is that right?
Well, I didn't hear everything you said, but there were what were called black propaganda operations. Is that what you're asking about? Yeah. The CIA actually got in big trouble in 1965 over that. Their death squads were originally called counter-terror teams. And of course, that's a name that is back in vogue big time. But in 1965, they were calling their death squads counter-terror teams, and they had created them to go into enemy villages and to commit atrocities against the people against the leaders of the Viet Cong. You know, they would cut off their heads and stick them on poles and stuff like that. They would do all sorts of dastardly deeds. And other times they would actually, these counter-terror teams would actually dress up like the Viet Cong. They would wear black pajamas and put emblems that identified them as being enemy soldiers and enemy units. And they would go into South Vietnamese government villages and dressed as Viet Cong. They would assassinate loyal subjects of the South Vietnamese government and mutilate them and put their heads on a pole and do all sorts of dastardly things. And then they would notify the press, and the press would come by and say, well, look at how awful the Viet Cong are. So they actually got caught doing this in 1965. It actually made it into the news. And so they did what the CIA always does in that kind of a situation. They changed the name of the program from the counter-terror program, and they started calling their death squads provincial reconnaissance units. And they said, we don't do that anymore, and we've disbanded the counter-terror teams and all that kind of stuff. But they just put the shell under a different, the pea under a different shell, and they changed the name of the label on the box, and everything proceeded apace. And they do that sorts of things all the time, all over the place. That's what what's called psychological warfare, black propaganda. That's basically something that the CIA is expert at doing.
Yeah, so this is something that became very clear reading your book, CIA as Organized Crime, how central terror is to these operations. I'll just read a couple of lines from the book. You have, as the CIA learned in Vietnam, killing specific targets doesn't terrorize an entire population into submission. Only indiscriminate mass murder can achieve that ghastly goal. How this kind of operation creates a system that terrorizes everyone in order to create millions of informers. There's more than one thing there that I find compelling, but the first one that's maybe most obvious is, of course, the war on terror, which is now so central to the rhetoric of government now and the policies. It's at the forefront of so many people's minds. But it seems as though the real art of terror is something that's been perfected by the CIA, as you describe it.
Oh, absolutely. I should add that the Phoenix program was considered the United States lost the Vietnam War, and it was a big, did a lot of damage to the egos and the prestige of the United States military and the CIA. It really hurt their feelings. And so they, the one thing that really made them feel, good about the Vietnam War is that they learned how to take the Phoenix program and apply it globally around the world. It's the kind of thing that where they, the Phoenix program is like a template for the entire war on terror. You can see it in, it's, at the time it was introduced in Vietnam, the military resisted Phoenix kind of operations because they target civilians. Okay. The CIA doesn't usually get involved in military operations. I mean, and it does certainly in terms of gathering intelligence for the military, but it doesn't have, and it has its own paramilitary forces that it uses, but the United States military wages the wars that the United States fights, and the CIA kind of either provokes those wars so that the military has a reason to fight, or it supports the military in doing things that the military is not supposed to do, like targeting civilians. The military is not supposed to target civilians, so because the CIA is a clandestine force, it can go out and target civilians who are causing problems for any government the United States is supporting around the world. And so initially, back in 1967 and the late 60s and early 70s, the military was reluctant to get involved in the Phoenix program because it targeted civilians. But military officers and enlisted men were assigned to the Phoenix program against the wishes of the military command, because the CIA needed these people. They needed people to staff out their operations at the district and province and region levels in Vietnam, and they didn't have enough CIA officers to do all that. So they got the President of the United States and the White House to force the military to assign soldiers to the Phoenix program. And initially, the military resisted because it said that it put military personnel in the position of violating the rules of land warfare, which military officers and personnel take a pledge, a solemn vow not to violate. Well, all that has changed. And as the United States following Vietnam has become the policeman of the world, the military has become its police force. And it wages these kind of counterinsurgencies that you see all over the world now. I mean, they're all over Africa. You know, they created an Africa command, the special forces, just so that they can conduct Phoenix style operations in Africa. Afghanistan is entirely, almost entirely one big Phoenix operation, because the people that the military is fighting in Afghanistan are not an army. They're militiamen. They're civilian soldiers, Taliban and people who resist the United States. There is no opposing government that has its own military. So the people that the military is fighting in Afghanistan are civilians. They're militiamen, and they have guns, and they're fighting, trying to fight the American army, but they are not an official army. They're just civilians. And so 40 years ago, that would be considered illegal. But the United States has changed the rules of ground warfare, and it's the only way that by conducting these Phoenix operations, which generally which the military and the CIA use to these Phoenix style operations to basically, and this is what you were talking about, terrorize an entire population of people into submission. They don't just target the guerrillas who are fighting the American forces and its puppet government in Afghanistan. They target their families. They target their cousins. I mean, you must always, you know, they're always bombing weddings, and they're always bombing funerals, and they're always going into villages and wiping out everybody in the village. Because on the assumption that when these guerrillas are fighting them, the only way you can actually get back at the guerrillas is to try to kill their family, so that it makes the price so high that they will give up their guns and stop fighting. But, you know, just like in Vietnam, the people that the United States is fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq and all around the world generally aren't, they're not like Americans. They're used to having wars fought on their own turf. And they know that that's the price that America is going to make them pay. And if they want to be free of America, then every man, woman, and child gets involved in the conflict. And that's just the way it is. And that's why they end up beating the United States, because here in the United States, families feel very much that their men folk are warriors who go off and fight these dirty wars where they're traumatized because they have to kill women and children. And they come home and they have PTSD and they're wounded warriors, and American women and children wonder, how could these foreigners be so cruel to our men? They make our men kill their women and children. You know, they don't just surrender. And so the propaganda that the military and the CIA wage is basically aimed against the United States, the people of the United States, because they have to create the mental conditions within the people of the United States, so that the women and the children and the fathers and the brothers of soldiers feel it's perfectly okay for them, for their menfolk warriors to go out around the world and wage these kind of Phoenix operations, in which American soldiers are specifically targeted against not just guerrillas, but their wives and their children. So the biggest element of the Phoenix program, as it's been expanded around the world today, is in order to create the conditions within America itself through the media, you know, and National Football League and all the different components of American society that create sympathy for American soldiers doing these sorts of things, so that these sorts of things can be funded by Congress with the full support of the American people. So by and large, the military and the CIA wage most of their propaganda and most of their psychological operations against the people of the United States. And they do it very successfully.
So the whole thing of organized crime and drug trafficking obviously is central to your analysis of Vietnam and the Phoenix program and up to the present day with Mexico. How much were drugs the reason that the US was in Vietnam in the first place, would you say?
Well, there's a stated reason and there's an unstated reason, okay? And the stated purpose was to protect democracy in South Vietnam from the encroachment of communism in North Vietnam and to preserve the religious liberties of the South Vietnamese people. If they wanted to, from the godless communists who are going to take away their churches and their crosses and prevent them from worshiping God. Now, then there's the unstated purpose, which was that the United States is an imperial nation that wanted the resources of South Vietnam. And it wanted to have the oil fields that are off the coast of South Vietnam, and it wanted to have access to all, to ha want to have military bases in South Vietnam so that it could project American power into the into that part into that region of the world, especially bases against China, which it really considered to be a strategic threat. South Vietnam itself was no strategic threat to America. It posed no danger to America. So reasons had to be concocted that would make Americans support the war. And Americans are propagandized to believe that communism is bad and that the communists want to destroy the churches and rob people's freedoms. Now, of course, South Vietnam was a Buddhist country. Maybe 10% of the people were Catholics, and the CIA managed to arrange it so that the Catholics, by and large, staffed most of the government positions. This has been the system in South Vietnam since the French had colonized South Vietnam, and the French had used, converted Buddhists to Catholicism, and then once they had converted them, they had put them into positions of authority in the police and in the administration of the government, because they now had a common belief, and the Americans did the same thing. But that was only they so they were able to control the government through the co-opting of wealthy people in South Vietnam who wanted to profit from the war. But by and large, the 90% of the people who were just average Buddhists felt no connection to the government of South Vietnam, and they actually welcomed what were called the communists by the United States, but who were actually their brothers from the north who were just trying to liberate the South Vietnam and expel the Americans so that the Vietnamese could run the country the way they wanted themselves. So the United States basically ran the war, the South Vietnamese government, by corrupting the people of South Vietnam and buying them off and giving them, lots of money so that they would actually collaborate against the interests of the people of their own country. Did I make that clear? That's basically the root of the corruption. It's that they created an upper class of bourgeoisie, and the bourgeoisie then thereafter related to the American occupation forces upon whom they were totally dependent. And they went along with the American policies because it benefited them, even though it harmed the other 90% of the people in South Vietnam who just wanted the Americans out of the country so they could live in peace. That's ultimately the form of corruption that the CIA uses around the world. it gets a creates a segment of a population in a country that it wants to occupy. It did the same thing in Afghanistan. It does the same thing in Iraq. It creates a collaborationist class of people, a very few people that get a lot of special privileges in exchange for implementing American policies which harm their fellow citizens of whatever that country is, Afghanistan or Iraq or South Vietnam or wherever.
Well, one of the things I was interested in mapping by talking to you was how the Phoenix program moved at a certain point from Vietnam to Mexico, and how the common thread there seemed to be the drug trade.
How the drug trade moved to Mexico?
Yeah, and the Phoenix program.
Well, that's an interesting subject because, you know, the United States didn't have unlimited funds to pay off the South Vietnamese military officers and politicians who were supporting American policies. So they had to give them incentives. And one of the incentives was opium. At the same time that the United States was waging its very public war in South Vietnam, it was waging a secret war in Laos, where there were vast opium fields. And the CIA actually controlled the transport of the opium from Laos to heroin plants in throughout Laos, and then the transportation of the heroin from Laos to the South Vietnamese generals and politicians who saw, well, many of whom had like these franchises throughout the country where they could sell it not just to American servicemen, but to American, to anybody else in the country who wanted to get high. And they made fantastic bouts of money. The CIA also allowed the Laotians, again, who were entirely funded by the United States. It allowed these Laotian forces to make money off the opium trade, but it also, a lot of this opium and a lot of the heroin was sold on the world market, not just to Laotians and not just to South Vietnamese, but it was transported into Thailand and Hong Kong and then sold to the mafia, the United States mafia. And it started waking its way back into the United States. And the CIA and its partners in crime were making millions and millions of dollars. And when the Vietnamese War ended and the CIA and the United States were chased out of Laos and South Vietnam and Cambodia, they had to start looking for someplace else to set up business. And they basically then switched their operations to South America with a large base of operations out of Mexico, because of course that's the major jumping spot into the United States, which has always been the major consumer of CIA narcotics. Something that not too many people used to know, but more and more people understand all the time, is that it's the CIA that's bringing most of the drugs, allowing most of the drugs that reach the United States to come into the United States, so that it can fund its subversive operations overseas. You know, it's not a happy truth, but again, I document it all in my books. And Mexico, of course, has been, you know, the CIA destabilizes Mexico by allowing for gun runners to smuggle guns into Mexico and arm the various cartels in Mexico and in Colombia and elsewhere around the world. And they use those cartels, which they arm, to help destabilize the governments in South America, Central America, and Mexico, so that these destabilized governments then need American military and intelligence assistance. So they create this sort of revolving door of selling guns to these countries, smuggling guns and selling them to drug dealers and revolutionaries, and then of course, using the prophets for their own nefarious reasons, and then forcing these governments into debt because now they need United States assistance, military assistance, or intelligence and security assistance in order to fight off the revolutions that the CIA starts. So it's this beautiful revolving door that keeps everybody south of the border, all the countries south of the border, destabilized and easy pickings for American corporations, who then go down there with billions of dollars in bribes so that they can bribe the politicians in those countries and take over their industries. And that's American imperialism, and that's the CIA's role in it.
It's mind-boggling.
I got about 10 more minutes, okay, Jason?
Oh, God, we're barely scratching the surface. I mean, what you're describing there's so many different angles and there's so many different goals that seem to be being achieved that are syncretized. So, for example, and also you didn't mention how the cartels, or some of the cartels at least, were CIA-trained death squads who then created their own organized crime. So there's an even another direct involvement there in the creation of the drug war in Mexico.
What you really need to focus on is how the CIA and its, in these last few minutes that we have, creates the conditions within the United States that permits all this to happen. Okay. Why is it that the American public is so militaristic? Why does it feel the need for 750 military bases around the world? Why does it feel the need to honor soldiers at football games? Why does the public have all the support for the military? And what is it that creates this militarism in the United States? Okay. That therefore you can justify anything that the United States, you create all these enemies around the world, straw dog enemies, because nobody can touch the United States. It's not like anybody's coming here except that, on 9/11, there were terrorist attacks, and every once in a while, and very infrequently, there's a terrorist attack nowadays. How the creation these conditions, what is it that actually creates these conditions in the United States that has Americans so terrified that they allow their government to conduct all these illegal and ghastly operations around the world? That's the thing. That's the big question, is how have the American people become so brainwashed since, World War II, and then especially since Vietnam? And that's a subject that would take hours to explain, because the CIA has basically infiltrated every facet of American society, not just the media, but especially the media, but academia, also, almost every public institution. Since 9/11 and the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, it has infiltrated American law enforcement to an incredible extent. The Department of Homeland Security, which is largely psychological operation, a political and psychological operation, is actually the institution of the Phoenix program here in the United States. And it creates the same, it treats the American public the same way that the CIA treated the South Vietnamese people during the Vietnamese War. It tries to terrorize them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's done a very good job of it. And that's the reason, the making American people so afraid and so ignorant of what's going on in the world through the control, highly controlled distribution of information, that the American public supports all these things. And this is the thing that you that people really, really need to focus on, and how that happens, and how they, as American citizens, are complicit in all the crimes that the CIA and the United States military commit. And until each and every individual American starts understanding how misinformed and disinformed they are, and how their beliefs have been shaped by these nefarious forces into nefarious ends, and how until each individual comes to that realization, one individual at a time, nothing's ever going to change.
Well, very well said. I mean, I'm not going to ask any more questions, because that's a great point to end on, and maybe we can pick it up another day. I mean, I've got so many things I'd like to get into with you. If you have another time slot for me, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, see how your listeners react to this, and if there's anything more that I can contribute, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks I'd be glad to. But I'm really very, very busy right now, and you've been a nice host, but I just don't have a lot of time tonight, okay?
I hear a voice that's not my own that tells me to jump into the sea. I'm tired of listening to these words. I know they aren't meant for me. I know they aren't meant for me.
Well, that was my very brief conversation with Douglas Valentine. If you'd like to hear me talk to Doug again, then let us know in the comments section, and hopefully Doug will find the time. If you want to support this podcast, likewise, comment, give feedback, or make a donation, or buy one of my books, Prisoner Infinity, Seen and Not Seen, Dark Oasis, Paper Tiger, or you can pre-order Vice of Kings. If you have bought and read any of these books, if you can review them online, that would be great. I kind of encourage people not to use Amazon at this point. Don't know where else you'd review it. You could review it at your blog. Go on. Goodreads, I suppose. I'm probably going to combine longer podcasts into a single file in the future, so it'll just be once a week, whether it's a two-hour conversation or not, because it's going to save me time and effort, and I'm getting old and time is running out, so I need to economize a bit more with my time. This is the Limitless, the podcast between.
I won't listen anymore. These words, these words are yours. These words are yours. From when you are born, everything you are told becomes you without your choice. Some point they become the family of one that speaks with only one voice. Speak with only one voice. I won't listen anymore. I won't.